Blog Talk Radio.
Out there listening in Taino Radio, Radio Taino, Ita, Buk, Toka. Hope everyone's well out there. How are you? And I'd like to thank everyone, especially your future listeners, man. I know you're downloading the show, and I really appreciate it. And all those who are in the house listening on air. Later on, we're going to open up the air, the cyber studio around... Let me see, a little after, I would say around 8, I'm a little lost. Around 9:15, I'll open up the lines if anyone wants to call in. But this show is entitled Taino Dualism, Yin Yang, and the Martial Arts. So we're going to lead, I'm going to lead a discussion on the influence of martial arts in the Taino community. And also a discussion on the concepts of dualism and yin yang. Okay, it's going to be addressed. And I'll be towards the end. But right now, I'd like to introduce my panel and my good friends. Thank you for taking the time, your busy schedules, to be on the show here in Taino Radio. And the first brother I'm going to introduce right now is all the way from the mountains of Massachusetts, I believe. Alberto Santos, are you there?
Yes, I am, Santa Cody. Thank you.
Oh, that's cool. What, now, where are you from again? From where? What mountain in Massachusetts?
Well, I don't actually live on a mountain. I do live somewhat, and I do live in a town in central Massachusetts. And it is kind of near some wilderness. So if you consider some of the trails to be on the mountains, then you can say that I'm on a mountain.
There you go. See, you know? There you go. That's so cool, man. That's so cool. And then I have another person, another brother of mine from way back. And that is from the mountains of Bushwick. We have Rene Perez. Is that so?
Yes, sir. I don't necessarily live in the mountains, but, you know, if you want to call it.
Oh, definitely, especially when you're on a train, right? Was that the L train up there?
Or? Exactly.
Well, that's a mountain, man.
Yeah. The JML, I think it is.
Oh, cool, man. Then. Yeah. And then, you know, I'm going to go around again and you can introduce yourselves once again more formally. I just want to open up the table here. And then I got also, I believe I got Bilkis. Is she in the house? In Aruguatu. Firewoman, are you there? Hello? That's weird. I see she's on the line. But I guess she is. Hold on a second, guys. We got some time here. We're on Indian time here. See what's going on. So, Bilkis, are you there? Hold on a second. I'm just trying to connect here. All right, well, let's wait for her. I think she might have some phone issues. So, Alberto, let me start with you. Let's get into let's go backwards. We're going to go into the martial arts realm, okay? And the reason I picked this topic is through the years, I don't know how many Tainos I met through the years who are into martial arts, either black belts or instructors, had their own schools. I remember when I first started in the Taino Nation back in the 90s, we had an instructor who was teaching Makana fighting, and I can't remember his name. His last name sounded like Machete. Taka Machete, something like that. but he was a very good instructor, and he was teaching street fighting. And there's a lot of other brothers and sisters through the years that were into martial arts. So, Alberto, just give me a little background on your martial arts history, okay?
Yeah, totally. I'd love to. So, first and foremost, hello, everyone. Again, my name is Alberto. And, my martial arts history and experience actually resides in Taekwondo. It's a Korean martial art, and it's something that, I've always been fascinated by martial arts. You know, I did spend some time going to Kung Fu, doing that first a little bit, but unfortunately, just because of the time and we didn't have the finances, I wasn't able to continue. But later on, I did start attending Taekwondo, and I actually did it with my father. And it was a really fun experience. I learned a lot.
Wow.
I lost a ton of weight because, obviously you go from, not doing so much to doing a lot of activity. I lost a considerable amount of weight. I got, I developed a lot of strength in my legs. This was during when I was also hitting puberty. So that kind of goes hand in hand. And, I spent about 5 years or so in the Taekwondo school. And this is in the school of the school had two different branches. It was by Grandmaster J.H. Young. He had a school in Central Mass. There are two schools. One was in Worcester. The other one was in Shrewsbury. And I went to the Worcester school. And personally, I enjoyed that school more. And that's where I pretty much made all my friends. So it also gave me a nice sense of community as well. And, I spent about, again, as I said, I was in this. I was in Taekwondo for about 5 years. I did manage to obtain the rank of black belt by the end of the 5 years, which I was pretty stoked about. I worked pretty hard for it, and kind of got myself in shape to be able to do that as well. And while I was also in Taekwondo, we had the school had a demonstration team in which we would go to organize tournaments and events, and basically we would do a bunch of board breaking. And I was a part of the demonstration team as a member of basically the power unit. And we would basically, what we would specialize in is breaking a bunch of wooden boards sequentially over over two cinder block bricks. So, pretty much, we break a ton of bricks all in succession. I want to say probably, anywhere from 10 to 20 boards. I don't really remember the count, but it was a fun time in my life. And not only that, but I was able to do it with my father as well. We were both on the team. We pretty much did it side by side. So it was a really fun experience for me, and I learned a lot, not just about martial arts, but also about, humility, respect, and discipline as well.
Wow, that's a good story, man, especially that you were your father, that's amazing. And how many years again you said you were doing this with your father, side to side?
5 years. I did. I pretty much outpaced him in terms of. I think he did it for about 3 to 4 years. But we started together, and we obtained our black belt together on the same test.
Nice. Wow. I know a lot of Taekwondo practitioners through the years. It's a very intense. Actually, my son, when he was younger, he's 8 years old, he went up to green belt, and then something happened with the school, but we didn't go back. But I was always proud of him when he was breaking boards and stuff. That was always good, and it was always good seeing his face like, oh shit, I broke that, So it was kind of cool. All right, we'll put a hold on you for now, Alberto. I'm gonna get back to you, okay? Let me see. Hold on, Renee. Hold on a second. I'm looking at something here on my panel. We're having a little technical difficulties. Hold on a second. Okay. Senpai Renee Perez. Did I pronounce that right? Senpai?
Yes, Senpai.
Okay, what does that mean?
It means like a senior student.
Nice.
Yeah, that's what it means in Japanese.
Oh, that's awesome. So tell us about your martial arts background.
Sure. Well, when I was a kid, you know, my dad, you know, he was a movie buff.
Okay.
So, you know, I would watch, he would put me into movies as of like, you know this, Lewis, you know, the 36 Chambers, all the Kung Fu movies, the Five
Deadly Sins,
and Bruce Lee, you know, so Bruce Lee was like my hero, you know, and then
nice.
I you know, he was my hero. He was my idol. And then The Perfect Weapon, and then Above the Law, when I saw Steven Seagal and Jean-Claude Van Damme, I was obsessed. And American Ninja. I don't know if you met American Ninja back in those days.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was obsessed with trying to be a ninja. But at the time, we couldn't afford schools. When I moved to Coney Island in Brooklyn, New York, from East New York, from all those areas, we went to Coney Island, and I joined a little community school. It was for kids for kids who are bored, to keep them doing activity like basketball and stuff like that. But there was a Shotokan school there, so I did Shotokan there.
Okay.
And I didn't go too far from it because I was not impressed with the instructors.
Nice.
The instructor is,
mm-hmm.
yeah, you know, what we call now McDojos, you know. So the instructor, he was doing a demonstration, and he broke the board and broke his hand, and I left. So what happened was, as I got older, I started doing powerlifting in high school, and then I got into Aikido. And then Aikido was my martial art for years. Yeah, and I did that for years. I still do it. And then after that, I went into Kyokushin karate. And Kyokushin and Sato karate and Yushiro karate, which is an Okinawan karate. And Kyokushin, if you know what Kyokushin karate is, it's extremely very tough. It's like the Navy SEALs of the martial arts.
Oh, okay.
It's extremely brutal. It's more, the competitions is more bare knuckles, you know.
Oh, damn.
And so it's extremely tough. And I still practice that today. In fact, I have a sparring session next Tuesday. So we still do those types of training. And, you know, we did breaking. I've done breaking. I've done competitions, especially fighting competitions. I have a little bit of boxing, a little bit, and some judo because of Aikido. So I did, you know, so I have both backgrounds of that. And, you know, I'm not a sensei. I'm not a sensei because it takes years to be a sensei. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, I've done cheats before, but, yeah.
Wow, that's interesting.
That is my background. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like your style is traditional, too, especially, you know, it takes years. I think the minimum is 10
definitely.
Years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the minimum is 10 years in Chinese, you know, tradition. To even consider yourself a teacher.
Yeah.
Wow, okay. Well, keep it up, man. Well, we're going to get back to you, okay? We're going to make the rounds. Inaruguatu, Birki, is he there?
Hi, can you hear me?
Now, we can hear you now. We got you. It's crossing my fingers.
Awesome.
Yeah, so introduce yourself and also what style of martial arts you practice or practice. Go ahead.
Sure. So thank you for having me on.
Sure.
It's awesome to hear from all of you. So hello to the rest of the brothers in the arts. I started off with... Mm-hmm.
With what?
Oh, I started off with... wanting to join into some form of Shaolin Kung Fu, but I couldn't find that here or kind of like anywhere when I was younger. So I started off with Tai Chi. So I started with Tai Chi with the elders in the parks and just kind of joined in. They accepted me, and one thing led to another. I actually found myself in doing like modern Wushu and with the golden aspirations of perhaps becoming a stunt artist, doing martial arts. I too loved so much the old movies. I watched Iron Monkey, Fist, Fury, like anything old school. Loved it, and that's what I was drawn to. I did staff, long fist, long sword, Did a lot of different forms, competed. I also went on tour for about 3 months with a company, and it was kind of going through about 25 states, and it was called Voice of the Dragon, and it had its own, it was pretty much depicting all of the beginning to where we, where Chinese Kung Fu is, you know, to making it from Shaolin to a modern sport of a sorts, and the theatrical aspects of it as well. So it was a beautiful piece. I sent you some pictures a little late there, pardon.
No problem.
But I went back to the roots of it all throughout the injuries that I would incur, all the injuries that I would gather trying to do different things and competing and fighting. I actually healed them all up with yoga. So
There you go.
I found myself, you know, kind of always using that as the healing aspect of it. And
right.
then later on, as I got older, I got into more fighting, and I practiced mantis style with Grandmaster Wang. I don't know if anybody's heard of him, but he's pretty cool, and mm-hmm. he's a very powerful person that put me back on track with the qigong and stuff like that. Mm-hmm.
Wait, what's his name?
His name is Wang Rengang. So he's a grandmaster.
Wait.
He's pretty cool. He's still moving about even today.
Oh man, I think I owe money from back in the day. I'm sorry.
My child, Mantis style's on point.
Didn't pay my dues. No, I'm sorry.
So definitely went back. I'm practicing qigong, tai chi, and more than anything now. I don't compete. I'm no longer trying to get into shows or anything like that.
Right.
Yeah, so definitely the yin and yang. It's where I've settled, per se.
Ah, that's so cool. Thank you for sharing that. Let's see, we have someone, and we're gonna make these rounds, okay? There's a lot to discuss tonight in this whole sense of martial arts, Taino identity, and so on. So we have Guaribue, Jonathan, all the way from, well, you can let us know. Are you there, Jonathan?
Yes, I am. Greetings. I'm right here in Houston, actually.
From the mountains of Houston.
For the flat mountain from Houston, Texas.
How's
it going? Greetings, hey family. Brothers, how's it going? It's an honor to listen to everybody's journey within the martial path. It's truly an honor to salute you and be here in this same space. And thank you, Santa Cody, for receiving me.
No problem. Yeah, man. So just share about yourself, you know, your experience and your background in martial arts.
I'll be talking about my life technically because I started training when I was 3 years old in my father's kung fu school. We trained classical Northern Shaolin Kung Fu, and we are 34th generation from the latest tribe that's established in Henan.
Hello?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I'm sorry, you say what generation? 32nd?
34th,
okay, generation, okay.
I trained the Shaolin Kung Fu for pretty much that time all the way, well, until now. But mm-hmm. I also learned contemporary Wushu and got very involved with the International Wushu Federation and the guys making the movements to keep spreading and organizing contemporary Kung Fu, that which is referred to the USA as Wushu. So, during that time, I integrated knowledge in pedagogy, physical education, because I That was my major, and I also so I applied that to. I integrated martial arts in mainstream public school curriculums, and then got into yoga and also to the practices of Tai Chi and Qigong, and I'm still learning different styles and varieties of expression of movement and movement patterns within combat and outside of combat.
Oh, right, right. And I guess like everyone here, we always, you know, try to improve our styles, you know, constantly. Like Renee says, he's sparring next Tuesday. We're always, and it never leaves us, right? It never leaves us. I just want to share a little bit about my experience, and then we'll come around again. Back in 1992, I became a Franciscan. No, I'm sorry. Yes, 92, I became a postulant. That means like a first-year student in the Capuchin Franciscan Religious Order. Second year, they send us somewhere in the middle of nowhere in the United States. For me, it was Wisconsin, middle of a farmland, population 500. And you're not allowed to work. And you can volunteer 8 hours a week, but most of your time is spent in study, almost like monasticism. And we can do anything we want. They won't like ask you, oh, what you're reading, you know, what you're studying. Well, most of them was, you know, Roman Catholic teachings, whatever, prayer. So I went to a bookstore in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. It was an old bookstore. And right before my eyes was a book called Tao of Jeet Kune Do by Bruce Lee. And that brought me to my childhood, because when I was in fourth grade, I was East New York, man. I was like the only Boricua there. I kept getting beat up every day. I actually got left back for fighting. And I always got beat up. But I always remembered Enter the Dragon, the movie Enter the Dragon, you know. And I always wanted to be like Bruce. So that brought me to my childhood. So I bought the book, and I spent a whole year reading that book, Tao of Jeet Kune Do. And practicing, you know, going to the woods and practicing the techniques he was teaching, but mostly learning the philosophy, you know. And then I bought his book, Bruce Lee, The Tao of Kung Fu, and that was very interesting. So I really absorbed the philosophy, you know. And then when I moved to Washington Heights, I met up with Robert Mahoney, who was a Kung Fu instructor, and he started teaching Tai Chi. We tried to rent a place, but it was too expensive. So he said, hey, want to do traditional? And we were like, yeah, you know, students were like, yeah, what the hell? So for four seasons, we practiced Tai Chi Chuan, you know, Chong style. And we were there when it's summertime and the heat in the winter, you know, rain, snow, whatever, you know. So he trained us how to do your form and practice the different combat styles of Tai Chi. In the different elements. So I did that. I'm on my 11th year now. 2 years I took off, almost two and a half. I took off formal training, but I still practice my form, you know. But I'm looking to get back. And he's still there in that hill. He's a traditionalist. I call him a traditionalist Irish Tai Chi master. But he's a good guy, you know, Robert Mahoney. And then I did take Shaolin, 27th Street in Lower Manhattan. Hinshi was the master there teaching, and with his wife. Oh man, I forget his wife's name. Oh my god. So Sifu was great. I think he was like one of the first Kung Fu Shaolin who defected to the United States. That first major tour they did, the Shaolin tour that came to, you know, New York, he was one of the men that defected. So eventually I had a school. So I had a good time there. I was there 3 years. And it was the hardest thing ever, man. But I felt so happy, you know. I remember when I did my first kick that was really, really high, I fell in my ass. That was fun, you know. So it seems like we have different styles. We have Taekwondo, Karate. Renee, remind me again. Aikido? Aikido, right?
Yeah, Aikido and Karate.
Kyoto Karate, Taekwondo. It seems like Shaolin Kung Fu was three of us so far. And yoga. Let me ask you, isn't yoga like the very first form in martial arts, before martial arts? Is that correct? Is there a traditional? I thought that's what the Bodhidharma had taught, that some form of yoga was what he introduced to Shaolin Temple. Yeah, well, sure. Who's this?
It does actually. Mm-hmm.
See, the reason I asked Bilki is because she's a yoga instructor. So,
oh yeah.
And, wait. So who spoke? Jonathan? Was that you?
Well, I asked if I could speak on the subject. I didn't know if because I didn't want to like jump in.
Well, let's give Bilki the first round, and then you take the second round about yoga and its influence in martial arts. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, it's debatable, but it's according to the history, from what I know, maybe I don't, you know, disclaimer, I could have been taught incorrectly, but an Indian monk taught mm-hmm. Shaolin monk.
Mm-hmm.
And so, therefore, the birth
yeah.
of Shaolin. That's what I saw. Like, you know, Ta Mo taught monks of Shaolin Temple. And then came out,
yep.
you know, a whole other birth of things and five animal styles of Shaolin and stuff like that.
Yes, the Bodhidharma, yep. You know, I remember when I went to my Shaolin Temple training, there was a huge statue of the Bodhidharma, Ta Mo. And this guy was like bald, long beard, you know, raggedy clothes, you know. Like, this guy does not look like a monk, the way we see monks, you know. So that was kind of cool. Jonathan, you was going to say something?
Oh, definitely hopping on what you guys just exposed. The fact that Bodhidharma coming from India, that being that one theory, because there's two aspects to look at it. One is very practical, and the other one very folkloric. And the folkloric side, you have that, and then in India, you have a very rudimentary aspect of wushu as a martial art in called Kalaripayattu that exposes a whole bunch of drills. They don't have form complicated development of structured forms like in Kung Fu. So
right.
you can see it looks like as it trickles down, you know, it looks like it
right.
trickles back into Kalaripayattu, and then it's close to that's very close to Bahari to Kalahari, and then there's mount close to Balahari that talks about African tribes for being the first inhabitants being established in that area. So then you go back to Africa and you have a whole bunch of very rudimentary aspects when it comes to a folkloric structure or folkloric and balanced structure of the martial part of it as well. So the female and the male energy, the yin and the yang, that is very well observed in Kung Fu and then all the other martial arts that it broke into. So aspects of combat we're talking about. Because when you read the history books on martial arts, a lot of them start from, the first inhabitants of the earth first started exhibiting defensive patterns by defending themselves when they needed to hunt, then when they were in combat with each other, and then from there it developed into patterns and techniques and observing animals, how they fought each other. And that's where we get aspects of animals starting in India and then well developed in China. In Africa, you see Dambe, which is wrestling. You see the root of Capoeira, which that you see like basics of Bagua, which is the flow movement of how do you flow that water, the movement that is, that brings the inertia, what you're doing together with your partner, you know? So that being said, there's a lot of debate on what the true original martial art is. When you see that it all breaks down as we evolved as humans, because first we we eventually needed to learn technique and strategy to be able to fight animals, to hunt or protect our family from the predatory animals. So from there into what we have now, which is like going full circle of that, and then you got MMA, which breaks the parameter with, through Bruce Lee's eyes. You see, philosophy, which was break out the box. You don't have a style, you have movement pattern. You see, so it goes full circle into that. So there's that, and then when it comes to the movement patterns per se, if we're talking about starting a practice, the first thing that a baby does before walking is learning how to stand. So in yoga you have the practice of asana. And then your asanas, you start exploring your strength, your endurance, and your flexibility in static poses. And then you move into dynamic poses. And then you have like Qigong, which is those dynamic movement patterns together with breathing, right? And then you have Tai Chi, which is the movement of that same energy. But then you also have forms, which is and then that is all done through forms at the end of the day. But then you see that the evolution of that into the meeting the evolution of the necessity for combat, to the necessity for survival. And then you get the mixture of the forms teaching the combatant how to excel even further, how to develop itself further, because already sages spent countless years meditating and learning how to keep their bodies through the execution of different stances, and then static movement patterns, and then dynamic movement patterns, and those are what we call flows and forms.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Yeah.
I have someone here. I have someone here in the studio. I just want to put a hole here. He's an elder from Philadelphia. I won't say he's a martial artist, but he's a fighter, okay, in the boxing realm. But I just wanted to do it. Come on. It's all right. Good. You're on. Wait a minute. Hold on a second. Can anyone guess who this is?
I have no idea.
Yo, I really thought he was gonna put somebody like Mick. I thought Mick was gonna be.
I don't know if you guys ever trained when you did your martial arts, but this is the song you gotta play. Twenty more push-ups. You gotta play this song. 21 push-ups, right?
Yeah, I put that on when I'm eating rice.
When what?
I put that song on.
Which song
when I'm eating rice and beans. The one you just played.
When you do what?
When I'm eating rice and beans, I play that song.
Uh-huh. Oh man. Yeah. What about this one? There we go.
That's
get ready for competition. That's right, stepping in that dojo. We're getting ready. Straight up from Philadelphia, Rocky Balboa, man. There we go.
That's a classic.
Hey, Lou, you know, I wanted to say there's a debate about what were the oldest martial arts. There's a big debate. One is from India, but there's also one called Pankration. You ever heard of it?
Pankration?
Yeah.
Wait, is that from, hold on, no, let me guess the country. It's like, I want to say Indonesia, but I don't.
Is that from Greek?
Yeah, it's from Greek. Yeah, it's from Greek.
Wow.
Yeah. And one of them is from Egypt. There's an old painting of the Egyptians and Greek. I think it's in Greek. The Macedonians, you wearing gloves, and they were boxing and wrestling, the Pankration, and that's been a debate, right? It's been a debate, but the Chinese always knew martial arts. What happened was, Buddha Dharma just came and just taught the meditation. That was
right.
it. She just felt like their body was very weak. So he said, you know what? Let me teach you guys how to be mentally strong.
That's it.
That's it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they always had the martial arts already there.
Yeah, he was into the internal arts, right? Internal, the chi, right? And stretching and so on.
I was taught that because, you know, Aikido has the gentle art. And I practiced the gentle art, and I actually practiced the hard art as well.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my other karate styles, is called karate with ki, right? And he told me that it's good to practice the hard style while you're young, which in Japan they call it goju. Goju means hard and soft. And it's good to do while you're young, but when you get older, practice the soft art. You know, because the body is very different. So it's good to practice the hard and soft, which is the yin and the yang, to do what you're saying now, the head of your radio show, the dualism. And that's one of the things that's very important, to practice both.
Nice, nice.
Yeah.
Well, Beakies, I want you to close your ears, but I know what I was taught when I was learning Tai Chi. He says, especially after 50 years old, you have to do Tai Chi as a requirement to keep your libido going strong. That's what I was taught.
No, it's true. It's very true because of the breathing. The breathing is very, very important because of martial arts. Yeah. One of the secrets of martial arts, especially the samurais, the warriors, mm-hmm. the Budo, the Bujutsu guys,
mm-hmm.
One of the secrets of Master Samurais was that they used to pay attention to the enemy's breathing. So I give you a great example so you can see what I'm talking about. And this is what they called Budo or Bujutsu. This is true Budo. It's when you pay attention to an individual's body, and the first instance you see their shoulder goes up, that means they're breathing in. That's when you attack.
Right. Right.
So because that's one of the true secrets of martial arts is watching the breathing of your opponent.
Because
once he has that second, that first breath in, you take his breath away. You see? You kill him right there. So this is one of the true secrets of martial arts, of Bujutsu. And I think
you just reminded me in Jeet Kune Do, one of the drills is you gotta look at your opponent in the eye and you can't blink. And you're watching the breath, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then they supposed to throw like a finger poke in your eye without touching you, of course. And you can't blink, but it's the breath. You always got to – that's the first thing is the breath. You got to see your opponent's breath, you know. It's so true, man.
Yeah,
so right when they throw the finger poke, you got to be ready, you know. You got to be anticipated.
Yeah.
And that's what Bruce Lee taught. That's true. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go for it.
No, I was just going to say, you know, you brought Bruce Lee and stuff. You know, when I was training with this guy, you can actually Google him. He was one of my teachers. He lives in Japan. And he started seeing my knuckles because I used to condition a lot. You know, the Chinese, they condition all the knuckles and fingers, but the Japanese, we condition the two front knuckles, so two base of the knuckles. And he used to see it really blackish, and then he told me, he didn't speak English, so we had a translator. He said, don't do that, and I was confused because I'm like, wait a minute, but the Chinese, they do conditioning. He says, no, he doesn't condition. And I understand where he was coming from because he practiced the soft style of karate, which is very rare in Japan. And I always wonder, why is his punches so painful? And one of them is that he used energy, which is difficult to do, you know. And it was his body alignment, his spine, because in martial arts, even in yoga, your spinal alignment is very, very important. It's extremely important. If your spinal line is off balance, then your center is off balance. It's your technique becomes a little, you know, that the energy. It's very important. And I think now in martial art, especially traditional, they're missing the practical aspects.
Exactly. Wow.
Yeah.
You know what? Mm-hmm. I have a guest here. He just came on. She wants to be heard, and I'm gonna put her on, and I'll have her introduce her as that. Doctora Flora from Borinquen. Are you there? Can you hear me?
Yes. Hola. ¿Cómo está todo?
Hey, she jumped in the dojo. She just jumped in the dojo. Can't stop. Can't
absolutely
stop a Boricua woman from coming in there.
You guys, man. Yes.
Go for it.
This is familia.
Yes. Yeah, so I'm curious. Introduce your name and what's your background in martial arts? I'm just
I'm a holistic doctor in Chinese, traditional Chinese medicine. I've had the opportunity to study with many people in Japan, China, and Thailand, and then mixed it in with, I like to call it, como un sazón, un sofrito with a mixture of Puerto Rico. And it's just helped me understand the form of energy that we call chi. And that energy is that we all have that in our spirit. We just have to learn to become more aware of it and work with it, because energy is all about transforming the energy. And once you can understand that and have wonderful people that can teach you, and also allow yourself to be a student, you can never stop flowing. And that's how I believe. I am a student, but I'm also a teacher as well.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice. You know, I'm going to go around table again. I'm going to start with Alberto Santos in the beginning. Now, I'm going to put you on the spot, okay? I didn't prepare you guys with this. This is just like, you remember the old test, the test? You got to come to the front. All the students are watching you. Well, this is it. This is the Taino Radio Dojo now. So
I bring it on.
I want to bring up, okay, you're going to visualize this. You're in the center, right? Now, I'm going to ask you a question you have to share with everyone, okay? What is, and you have to do it less than, let me see, I'll give you less than 4 words. How about that? Keep it compact. What, of all your years of martial arts, what was the teachings the teachings that that you still follow to this day, from day one to today in the martial arts realm? What did you learn, as what teaching that you still practice from day one to now? What stands out the most?
What stands out the most?
And you gotta keep it, you gotta keep it compact. Less than 4 words. That's the test. Keep it simple.
Okay. All right. 4 words. My biggest takeaway. From all my years of doing Taekwondo.
Yeah.
All
right. Right.
I think I can do this.
Okay.
So
there you
first
go.
And foremost, I think probably the first thing that I would say, I don't know if I would call it a teaching. I think it's more of a takeaway. I mean, stick to a teaching, that I can do that. But I think probably my biggest 4 takeaways is, you know, learning discipline. Well, I should say discipline. So that's one word.
Okay. Discipline.
So discipline, I would say commitment, you know, being committed to your art, what you're learning, and sticking with it.
Okay.
I would say respect to your elders, respect to your teachers, respect
nice.
To your students, and respect to those that are, you know, coming in, you know, after you. And respect
okay.
for the school, respect for the environment. And my last word, I would say, is fun. Have fun. You know, I think that, you know, as you know, it's always important to always make sure that you're enjoying yourself. You know, because if you're not having fun, then you're kind of robbing yourself an opportunity to enjoy yourself. And I think that a big part of having life, you know, a big part of, you know, enjoying and, you know, being alive, is having fun and enjoying what you do. So discipline,
wow.
commitment, respect, and fun. Those are my
wow.
those are my biggest takeaways.
That is awesome. You did a great job. I bow in front of you. You definitely passed. Awesome.
Thank you. I bow in return.
Thank you. All right, Renee. What you got?
I'm here, brother.
What you got for us all the years to today?
That I've learned in martial arts, basically, right? Okay.
Yeah, it stands out the most. Stands out the most.
It stands out? Okay.
Yeah.
Composure. Composure, because martial arts taught me that anger is never the problem. Controlling your anger, controlling your composure. My teacher used to say anger is one letter short of danger. So, and fighting, when you learn to control your composure, and if you're fighting angry, your opponent wins. Your emotions get to you. To control your emotions and to control your composure. I would say also discipline and also and being mentally strong, because martial arts can break you down, you know. And I would say a warrior spirit.
Mm.
And it helps me. Yeah, so that's what Budo is. It's having a samurai spirit, the Budo warrior spirit. And if you don't have that, then that will make you kind of like a weakish. Your opponent will take advantage of you if you feel weak, especially mentally, physically,
right,
and spiritually. And the martial arts, they teach you three things: mind, body, and spirit. So if you're not balanced in that trinity, then especially that, then you're not really a true martial artist. Because remember this, it doesn't matter what belt you wear or color, because people don't punch your belt, they punch your face.
That's
and
right.
Another thing is, to me, a black belt, and to me, is martial arts told me to be humble, no matter what color belt you are, because a black belt is still a white belt that's still learning. And sometimes you know, there's people who get black belts and they think that that's it. But remember this, I'm just going to end it with this, is when you get your black belt, you're not a master. You're a master of the martial art. However, it's a true martial artist is a master of himself. You see, it's to better yourself.
Interesting.
Make you a better
yep.
person. That's me as a true martial artist.
That's interesting. I like that. All right, Bob, before you pass, how about that one? Wow, we got some true masters here. Big Keys, you're next. What's up?
Thank you.
Okay.
Well, okay, let's see. I guess since it is about yin and yang, I shared that for me, yoga was the yin, right? And the yang was kung fu. And it's pretty much the balance. I gained the balance, and to maintain that flow, the connection, you know, and the power that you gain within, it's the resilience. That type of resiliency is just unfathomable. So what would be the the type of form or type of actual action, I would say trial energy was one of the real takeaways for me. Just knowing that, you know, you can generate chi, you can generate that energy and then explode it forward, whether it be in a fist, a kick, a block, you know, you could, you know, it's just amazing how you're constantly doing a yin and yang dance within a form, a stance, in your mind, that type of, those things that were mentioned from the other folks on the panel. And so I will say, being a female, doing kung fu, not having been inspired by parents, and just gravitating to it and having good role models, and learning from those that are not such good role models in the martial arts community. Being around that, you know, helped be just to kind of reinforce that male, being a female amongst all the males, just kind of having that brotherhood and knowing that you're embraced by a whole bunch of guys that don't know you, and now that you just have a whole bunch of brothers now, you know, and you have like all these awesome, inspiring figures in your life. So it was definitely enhanced by getting into martial arts at a young age. I think I started around maybe 17, 18, maybe a little bit younger, because I did Tai Chi in the parks with the elders.
So I would definitely say energy, connection, power for me.
Nice. Okay, so we're getting into that energy. All right, good. I bow before you pass the test. Wow, that's great.
I don't pass.
Okay. The Flora, come to the middle there. Let's see what you got. Four takeaways, four teachings. Huh?
Okay, good evening again to mi gente. And what I truly believe in my spirit is move like water. As you move like water, flow with grace, allow your spirit to move freely, learn from your teachers, and accept the truth. Tai Chi and Qigong has allowed that for me, and keep it simple.
Nice. I like that. So you pass. I bow before you. Awesome. Last but not least, from the mountains of Houston, Jonathan, come on up.
From the flatness of these mountains. So I'll say if we were to compact that into like a 10-second thing, we'll be present. Here and now, always in constant gratitude, because that brings about the most natural state of man, which is humility, and that will place you in a position of being a constant student of all, because we are all constant students of all, not being more and less than anyone, but everybody sharing their own experiences in their own existence.
Right. Interesting. That's awesome. You as well has passed. That's awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
So all of you have passed. Every single one of you. You guys are truly masters in your realm of yourself, especially. You know, I want to introduce a little Taino spirituality, some beliefs here. Okay. Well, more than beliefs, a worldview. Okay. Back in 1997, it was one of the first articles I read that really got my interest. There was an archaeological dig in La Aleta in the Dominican Republic, and they recovered a lot of artifacts from a sinkhole. One of them was a gourd that was perfectly preserved. So they go, and the article is ceremonial offerings and religious practices among the Taino Indians and archaeological investigation of gore use in Taino culture. And as you know, the maraca and gores in general are very sacred. They're containers, you know. And as you all know as well, one of our ancestral practices is semiism, the semi. And you can still find them in farms, you know, the three-pointer, the yokahu semi. But what I want all of us to think right now, has anyone ever seen that? And, you know, I'm going to have this on YouTube, actually. So I'm going to put a slideshow up of these, what I'm talking about. Have you guys seen that vessel that has, like, two breasts and a penis in the middle? Have you guys seen that? It's a water container, water vessel.
Yeah.
Have you seen that? Yeah. All right. I want
with
you to
heart?
Think of
It had, like, a heart, right? It looked like a heart, right? Like a heart shape.
Yeah, exactly.
No,
but it's two breasts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the penis in the middle,
it's
right? And it's like it's a water container, and it's made out of clay. I also want you to think of the twins. When you see twin semis, that the twins that look away from each other. I want you to think of that. And I'm going to get back to that, but there's a quote I want to read, and I want us to discuss this. We might go over time if you guys are still in this, you know.
Vamos pa'lante.
Because I really want to hit home on this. And since you all come from a martial arts background, chi work, we're exposed to philosophies, you know, and you've been in a Taino movement for so many years as well. So let's try to apply our martial arts philosophy skills to this in living color. No practice. I haven't said anything to you guys about this, right? Okay, I'm going to start the discussion first, and we'll take it from there, okay? And this is a quote. And the, oh man, I forgot to tell you who the author was. That's not good of me. Ryan Martin. You can look it up online, Ryan Martin on Gores. And this is what he writes. Hold on a second. I'm trying to look for the exact quote. Okay. Dualism is found in the Taino culture of Semillism, and dualism is also represented in their artifacts, both in rock art and in clay pottery and figurines. Images of two faces either looking in different directions or one on top of the other, as represented in petroglyphs and in petroglyphs, express disbelief in dualism. It is because of this notion of dualism that Gores in Taino culture was able to acquire both a functional and a religious meaning. So he's really hitting home this whole sense of dualism. And I remember back in the day, I remember I held a semi someone owned, and it had at least four different faces on it. Depending how you held it, it turned into something else, you know? And it was really powerful, but it was like four. So it was like two times two, you know? After taking martial arts, learning the whole concept of yin yang, you know, I realized that, wait a minute, I think they got this wrong. I think it's more like yin yang, where it's not really two, it's one. And they work in combination, you know? So you look at the rattle, at one time it was alive. We don't eat the rattle, but or the gore, but we use it as a rattle, and it becomes alive with music, with rhythm, you know? So there's that whole sense of death and life, but it's really one. It's intertwined, like the yin-yang. So I always used to argue about, like, wait, it's not dualism, you know? Like the European notion, like the Greeks, is dualism. It has to be yin-yang. I think it's yin-yang. So I've always argued this point, but it always comes back to this whole dualism, you know? So in your understanding of yin-yang and what I just explained now, and I know this is not foreign to you, what I'm saying, what's your opinions on that? And I'll start with Alberto.
Yeah, so this is a really good question. What does yin-yang kind of really mean to us, especially with a martial artist, you know, type of perspective? Well, first and foremost, let me answer by saying this. You know, I kind of see the yin and yang, and, you know, I've really pondered on the idea of duality and dualism and, you know, what it means, what it may mean on the surface, but what it may mean on a deeper level. And one of the things that I've kind of come to accept, and of course, I don't dictate it or accept it as an absolute truth or, you know, the end all be all, but I think it's a pretty good point in which I find myself that I've arrived at. And it's simply this, that, you know, in all different areas, there's a spectrum, and there's going to be two extreme ends of that spectrum, such as hot and cold, day and night, up and down, left and right, good and bad. And the thing is, you know, we often view these things as something that is separate, you know, cold is separate from hot, you know, left is separate from right. And, you know, there's sort of that sense of duality that there's one force that is opposite or, you know, against one another, you know, something that is on two different ends, something that is, you know, completely, as I said, opposite. And one thing that I kind of come to terms with, you know, as I read books and I kind of really, you know, thought about it over the years, you know, studying philosophy and even spirituality, you know, combining with, you know, a little bit of martial arts, is that, you know, things aren't separate. That, you know, when it comes to dualism and duality, they are actually one and the same. And the reason for that is because, you know, hot and cold, using that example, they're two temperatures on, you know, on the same spectrum. You know, one's, they are just on the opposite ends of the same spectrum. They're, you know, and without one of them, the other couldn't exist. You couldn't have cold if you didn't have hot, and vice versa. You can't have day without night. There's no darkness without light, and there's no light without darkness. And, you know, because they need one another, they are also intertwined as a part of existence. And because of that, they are united as one. And looking at the yin-yang, we see seemingly two different forces. They're shaped the same, but they're, of course, different colors. You have, you know, the white aspect versus the dark aspect, the black aspect. And, you know, at first glance, it does appear as if they are separate. You know, there's a sharp line, you know, going in between them, while they also possess a tiny part of the other party, though the white stripe possessing the black and the black possessing a small circle of the white. But again, as we look at the whole picture, one side couldn't exist without the other. And, you know, if we just, you know, look at both of them and look at the whole, we can observe and see that, again, it is one whole complete figure, that they're intertwined and they are united under this illusion of being separate, of being, you know, separate. You know, they are, again, two ends of the same spectrum, two polar opposites, but united under that spectrum. And I find that, you know, oftentimes, you know, I find that I understand something when I have experience. For an example, if I have experience not having, you know, say that I find a period in my life where I may struggle with finances per se, I understand what that's like. You know, you might have to go a day or two without food, or, you know, maybe you have to sell a couple of things that you don't want in order to pay some important bills. And, you know, if I find myself in a point in my life where I am financially well off, you know, I have, you know, say that I have some property, I may have a house, I might have a reliable car, you know, something that I might, you know, enjoy to drive, right? Something that might be a little more luxurious, you know, I would be much more able to appreciate that, because I know what it's like to have to go without. I know what it's like to have not, and I can understand what it's like fully to have. And another example to, you know, further illustrate this, this idea is that, you know, I came to realize that, you know, as I was growing up, being an adolescent, I often found that the reason why some children kind of grew up spoiled, I really thought about this. I wanted to answer this question, but, you know, I didn't know who could answer the question, or, you know, who could pinpoint me in the right direction. I think, like many of you, sort of grew up with some form of a humble beginning. And, you know, when going back to one of the schools, the Shrewsbury School of Taekwondo that was connected to the same branch, you know, there was more, the students in that school they came from a more privileged background. You know, the families tended to be more financially well off, because Shrewsbury is a city in which does require a little bit more of a higher net worth and a higher income in order to reside in. And I found the Worcester, you know, basically the Worcester students didn't like the Shrewsbury students very much, and vice versa. The Worcester students found that they thought that the Shrewsbury students were kind of snobby and a little spoiled, whereas the Shrewsbury students looked down upon the Worcester students. It was an unfortunate situation, but that's what it was. And I asked myself again, why is it that, what is this difference? Why is it like this? And I kind of came to figure out that, you know, they didn't really know what it's like to not have. They never really had to go without before. And, you know, because of this, you know, they have having everything at their fingertips, having what they needed and then some, you know, they're raised with a particular life experience. And without having the experience of knowing what it's like to have less or to not have as much, you know, and being in a position in which you do have, you know, that experience is lacking. And because of that lack, there's an imbalance. And, you know, when there's an imbalance, that spectrum isn't necessarily complete, and things are, you know, they are off balance, of course. So that was one of the big life lessons that I sort of learned when it kind of came to, you know, things being on the opposite sides of the, you know, of the spectrum,
right.
incorporating, you know, the idea of duality, dualism, and how that associates with, you know, the yin yang, what I've learned from that, and, you know, connecting that to my martial art experience. So
that
I hope
is
that answers your question.
What? Yeah, man. That yo, that's your thesis right there. I think you should get it in writing. That's awesome.
I'll keep that in mind.
Definitely, man. You got it. See, this is, you know, our martial arts helps us form these ideas and concepts, you know, and our Taino beliefs worldview. Let me see. I have the next caller. Let me see if I. Oh, Birkis, go ahead. You go. I got you on my panel as next. Birkis?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, definitely.
Fantastic. I'm going to keep it short and sweet because, unfortunately, I've got to run.
Oh,
but,
no.
I'm thinking of the energy, you know, the force, the vitality, the chi behind the yin and yang, and how that could possibly relate to the trigo. I don't know how to say it. Sorry, the trigonito. What you mentioned in our Taino
right.
culture. So I don't know if that has anything to do with each other. I can open that up to you to answer, perhaps.
No, but you know that's the whole idea, how the multi becomes one. You know, the two become one. Like when I see that vessel, I see the breast, which is a container of liquid, life-giving liquid, of the breast milk, and then I see the penis as semen, which also helps bring life to this world. You know, a baby, and they you know, it's two different functions, right? Male, female, but then it's all one in that vessel. It's one. It's connected. They're not separated.
Right.
And that's what
and
I find.
Like,
that's
like
yin yang.
Upward.
Huh?
It's also going upward, right? So it's like I forgot who mentioned it. The necessity of having good form and having like the linear spine. But I think there is like that linear aspect to it that shows. Okay, this is connection. This is heaven. This is earth,
yeah.
This is up, this is down, this is male, this is female, this is yin, this is yang, in all its forms.
Right, exactly.
You know,
and then when
together,
you, well, definitely, and then when you pour the water, you have to, you know, you have to, what's that word, I can't think now, when you pour water, the action of pouring, you know, the liquid is coming out, so that's like giving life, water is life, right? So, Or say juice, pineapple juice or something. Or chicha, right? For the arretos to get drunk. No, I'm just ending that in there. All right, Bikis, well, thank you for sharing. You know, we're going to continue our discussion.
Thank
if you have
so
to go,
much.
That's cool, but thank you for taking time. It's great.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you, everyone else, and have a good one.
Awesome. Thank you. Taino T. Now, who has the 832 number? My panel kind of mixed up here. Oh, that's Jonathan, right? Jonathan, you there? 832 number?
Oh, yes, my bad. My microphone was muted. Yes, that's
no problem.
That's
yeah, so the whole concept of yin-yang and Taino, is it dualism or is it yin-yang, the one? Go ahead, what do you think?
Would you repeat your question?
Oh, no. I just, the question was, you know, how we learn about yin yang, the oneness, you know, when we study martial arts, comparing it to our beliefs, or at least what the archaeologists are saying, that they see a dualism. But is it a dualism? I don't think it is. But what do you think?
Well, we call dualism to an aspect that comes from somebody who's, how can I say this? Somebody who is witnessing this as separate from themselves. So by nature, we're going to call it a dual. It's an aspect of myself that I, because I say I and then I see you, and that's already a dualistic on itself. Because,
right.
And when you see that, also when you see in some of our tribal cultures, you say, you don't say you and I, you say I and I. Like,
there you go.
Like, yeah, I'm talking to myself and myself, you know?
Yeah.
And that is a, debatable subject because duality can be an apparent dynamic being witnessed and interact with from the unisonness of who we are that is necessary in this maybe existence for certain laws to take place, right? Because then again, even the contrast of one cannot be done without the other. So,
there you go.
So it is the principle of the same thing, but the separation makes the dynamic happen. The apparent, how to say this, not the separation, but the illusion of the separation is what makes all of these dynamics take place at the same time. And then for us to, when I say take place, I mean for us to understand them, really. Because they are, whether we understand them or not.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. This is real deep discussions tonight. I love it. We get into the philosophical realm here, which is really spiritual. Dr. Florida, you're next on the line here.
Yes. Again, good evening. For me, I really, truly feel it's a constant flow that is endless. It's never stopping. And the dual is a constant flow, so there is no separation. And that flow means the flow of life, the flow of a vitalness. And what dual means really is all at once. In the Chinese medicine world, as I've been taught by some of my teachers in traditional Chinese medicine, I've learned that dual means constant, or there is no separation. There's constant movement.
Right.
Yes. And that's one of the important things that I've learned in this beautiful medicine that I call art. I am thankful. I am grateful. And when you see light, you see dark.
Right.
When you see the shady side of a mountain, la montaña, you see the other side, whether it's rivers, el río. When you see the other side of snow, you may also see rain at the same time. So I call that a constant flow of endlessness. And we have the choice to make a decision. If you want more of a positive, higher vibration or a lower vibration. And that is a choice. And that's what I believe it is.
So you don't see a separation in the dual.
No,
it's one.
Never have. Correct.
Interesting. So for you, Taino dualism won't be a negative title. Because you see it as one?
Absolutely.
There you go. Okay, and I've heard that argument, definitely. Definitely. And you're rooting your argument in the Asian, in the Chinese medicine.
Right. I find that the Taino histories of our roots, whether it's from Puerto Rico, Cuba, Jamaica, Santo Domingo, the Virgin Islands, you know, it's Haiti. It's the same as the culture of China, Japan, and Thailand. It's a constant flow, and I believe that, and I thank my ancestors and my abuelitas and my papitos to show me that.
Wow, that's amazing. That's great. We're going to follow up with. No, we need more time to really expand on this, but this is a great thing because it bothers a lot of people in the community. It's been argued before, Taino dualism, or you know, it's something that's, you know, it's, I know for me, for years, I've been studying this and wow. So this is great. Great stuff. Everyone is sharing. Renee, what do you think? What's your take on this?
Sure. I'll just keep it short, you know?
Sure.
Well, I know that, from studying different cultures and different civilizations, I know that they all talked about dualism, even in some of their fables and tales. So like the Egyptians, Isis and Osiris is one. And the yin and the yang represents the sun and the moon. So the sun and the moon is actually one. The only difference is that the moon comes at night, but the moon is a reflection of the sun. You get what I'm saying? So they're a reflection of each other. And the only difference between hot and the only difference between hot and cold is just the temperature.
Interesting.
You know, so
it's still water.
That's what it is. Yeah, they all in the same vibration, but it doesn't really matter. It's all one. So, yeah.
Wow. So, do you have a problem with that title dualism, or is it
no
at
all?
Short?
No. I don't think anything that word has been around for thousands of years, and I don't think for something a term that's been around for so long should be an issue now. And I don't know how that is an issue now, but if you look it now in the Taino, in our story, in our creation stories, if you think about it, now, I can share something that most people don't know about.
In South America,
the creation of the maraca. Now, I'll tell you something that is part of dualism. The story of Wayahona and Juan Bonito is found in South America.
That's
and
right.
The name is Orehu.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Orehu and Arawanili. Mm-hmm. That's the two names. And the story goes that the person, Arawanili, goes into the, he's rolling, he's going on his journey, and he sees this beautiful woman. And she's also considered a serpent, because Orehu means serpent or water spirit. And she teaches him the mysteries of the maraca. What she does is she tells him, plant this higuera and peel it. So while she finds the higuera, he says, how do you want me to peel it? She says, she peels it for him and puts two holes. The two holes puts the stick, the little palito.
Right.
That palito represents the circle of the maraca, represents the feminine, while the pole represents the phallic, which is the masculine.
There you go.
So the maraca is the dualism of masculine and feminine, the male and the female. So you can say the story of Wayahona and Juan Bonito is the story of the feminine and masculine energy that becomes one.
This is amazing. So the two become one. So there is the dance. I'm thinking of the dance. You know, play the maraca, this dance, female, masculine energies and so on. This is wonderful, yeah, and that came with the migrations, right, to the Caribbean. Those stories
to the Caribbean, exactly.
Yeah, the
maracas, and that's why when you shake it, the maraca represents that vibration, that energy. It's a representation or a manifestation of the masculine and feminine energy.
Wow, that's amazing.
So now, the beads, little beads in there is just
the beads,
because. The beads is because also the circle represents the head, and the little sibibis represents the ideas.
Wow!
So when you shake it, you manifest those ideas.
There you go. Can you repeat that again for the listeners? Mm-hmm. Repeat that again.
Sure. So the little higuera, the circle of the of the higuera, it represents the human head, while the sibibis, or the little pebbles, represents the ideas. So when you shake the maraca, you manifest those ideas.
This is amazing sharing here. Mm-hmm. So definitely there's that dualism, there's that oneness as well. And it's life, like Dr. Flora said, it's flowing, it's a flow, right?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
A dualism, the definition of dual in traditional times, and it should never be changed. And sometimes it's unfortunate, sometimes when people think they know more because they're overreading it and forget the simplicity of life, it's to remember the dualness is a purpose to follow two goals at once. So at once, simultaneously keeping it simple like a child or like water, and just enjoying the moment and living in the now. And that beautiful explanation of La Maracas is amazing. I love what you just expressed with the maracas, because to bring life, you need a sperm and you need an egg. And to really understand the human nature, you respect both the man and the woman. When you dance salsa, when you put together that form con las congas y las maracas, you are forming a one union. When that man holds that woman's hips, when that man holds her hand, and the woman trusts that vibration, you have una salsa. Una fuerza of love, peace, and just having fun.
Hey, Luis,
that is,
I love what
that
you
is,
said.
Oh, man.
I just wanted to share one little thing real quick about that, too, and I think that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Another thing is, like, if you look at the oldest, one of the oldest symbols is a circle and a dot, right? And that
mm-hmm.
circle represents the outside, the woman's womb, where the little dot represents the seminal fluid or the little seed. But now, mm-hmm. if you put a line across, that becomes something called in geometry, diameter.
Yes.
And if you know what a diameter is, a diameter comes from the word Dios Mater, or Godmother, diameter.
Amen.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So now it is the split between the masculine and energy
mm.
of both. And that's what's so beautiful is, you know, people shouldn't be a problem with that word dualism, because it's a beautiful concept. You know,
yeah.
mm-hmm. you can't think separateness. If you think separateness, then you become ignorant, you know.
And when it comes to accepting that, like the fact that we come to terms with the acceptance of the unity or the holisticness within the duality can solve so many issues of our lives daily. For instance, fear. Just as basic as that, fear. And then you see that fear comes from yourself, and you're the one that has the control of it, because once you understand it and see that the opposite is the opposite of love, it comes from the same energy, it vibrates. Like you feel it in the same area of your chest and close to your stomach, you know? And then love comes, like, also you can feel it from that area if it's real and unconditional like that in your solar plexus. So you like, the aspect of, or really at the end of the day, a lot of us have come, study to realize daily the depth of the idea of holisticness, of holistic existence, like the non-dualistic, but it's through understanding the existence of the duality that you are as well.
Listen, this, you know, we can go out all night, and this is what I love, man. This is awesome. We got to do a part two. Is anyone down for a part two? Because this takes, you know, because we're on, because we're unpacking all, this great knowledge that was passed down to from our ancestors, right? So is it safe to say, like, look, I got. Wow, all of you, we all have a connection with the chi, the energy, martial arts, and so on. So isn't it accident that we of our Taino heritage, our blood memory, it's no accident, right, that we're drawn to the martial arts? You think?
No accident.
What do you think, guys? You think it's an accident or what?
No such thing as an accident.
I don't think in coincidence. I believe in something called synchronization. So everything is a martial art, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like what Bruce Lee said, a martial arts is all about expressing. You
mm.
know, like singing can be type of like an expression martial arts, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Carpenter, using hands can be kind of a martial art. But anything to express yourself is kind of an art.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely. Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I like to end the show because we ran out of time. We super ran out of time. But guess what? I want to invite you guys back soon. You let me know when you guys are available, and ladies, and we're going to really throw down and really get to these philosophies. And let's compare the different tradition and see how our people, our ancestors, line up. You know, with all these different traditions. It's nothing wrong with that, right? Because that's how we learn.
No, never.
Yeah.
That's how we learn.
Right, there you go. Mofongo, right? That's it. Well, after this COVID stuff, we'll do a live show. We'll eat some mofongo. How about that? There you go.
Ooh, so, I love that.
With some aguacate and all that, right?
Hey, Louis, I even have a better idea.
I'm always down for
You can always do...
That's right.
Do a Zoom. You can always
well, you
do
know
a
what?
Zoom.
How about
podcast.
This? Let's raise who want. Okay, I can't see you guys raise your hand, but let's go for it. Let's do a Zoom next week. How about that? We're gonna build on this Taino dualism concept. Okay, philosophy, a worldview. Okay, you guys are
down
for a Zoom. All right, so I'll send the information. What I want to do with this show, and all you listeners out there who are tuning in the future as well, this is going to go on YouTube. I'm going to do like a slideshow showing the different Taino, what do you call that? The art, you know, the sacred objects that kind of depict this dualism. And also, if you guys can send me your photos, actually in your martial arts way, okay? Either practice or maybe it was competition, but send me some photos. Or Dr. Flora, when you were doing your healing arts, send me some stuff and I'll post it for that YouTube clip, okay? Is that all right?
Perfecto.
All right, sure. I'm going to do it. Yeah, and I'm going to let you guys know. So listen, I'm going to end the show with one song. It's called Ajerito, and it was by Juan Luis Guerra back in 92 when Dominican Republic and most of the Caribbean, most of the world was celebrating 500 years of Columbus. Guess what? Juan Luis
yes.
Guerra wrote this song. Thank you, everyone. Oh. Bon matin. Thank you. Bon matin.
I was missing the song. Thank you.